Welcome as we jump into another edition of Just the Truth. Glad to have you join me in the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Studio to lose weight for the last time. Visit myphdweightloss.com. Here's what we're going to cover today. Are we beginning to see Donald Trump finalize his shortlist for vice president? The former president and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis met privately in Miami yesterday, according to a Republican with knowledge of the meeting. It's being widely reported. And did South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem take herself out of contention of being Donald Trump's potential vice presidential running mate with her story of killing her bird dog? A presidential candidate is arrested at a campus protest over the weekend, and as anti-Israel protests linger across college campuses nationwide, many students are awaiting the consequences of taking part in these demonstrations. And some are suggesting, you ready for this? That they should be granted amnesty for their unlawful actions. We'll jump into that in just a moment. The Post and Courier ask a good question. Can South Carolina lawmakers serve a boss and the public at the same time? It happens a lot, the Post and Courier claim. And a gold pocket watch worn by the richest passenger aboard the Titanic when the ill-fated ocean liner sank was sold at auction on Saturday. Guess how much? It was a lot. 864-477-JOEY, 864-477-5639. Your text are welcome on the Furman Ford text line. You can leave a quick voice message. And, of course, emails are always welcome, joey@joeyhudson.com.
I told you we'd be back.
And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
It's Joey Hudson.
I wanted to name it the Joey Hudson Bill, but, you know, they don't allow you to name put names on bills. But I wanted to call it the Joey Hudson Bill because... I know that one's been near and dear to you for a number of years.
That's how it's done. Let your voice be heard.
And the truth shall set you free.
Here's Joey Hudson.
So former President Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis met privately in Miami yesterday, according to a Republican who had knowledge of the meeting and confirmed to various media outlets. During the multiple-hour meeting, DeSantis agreed to help Trump as the GOP's presumptive presidential nominee, who's trying to close the fundraising gap with President Biden in their 2024 election rematch. DeSantis, who was, of course, convincingly reelected in 2022 before launching his what would eventually become an unsuccessful bid for 2024 presidential nomination, has built up a pretty big network of wealthy donors who could be helpful to Trump as the general election campaign heats up. Now, this is an interesting development over the years. At one point, the Republicans were sort of the fat cats. And that was one of the things the Democrats always threw at Republican candidates, that they were able to raise large amounts of money. And look, they do raise a lot of money. But somehow over the years, the Democrats have been able to close the gap, and Joe Biden has far exceeded the amount of money that he has raised compared to what Donald Trump has so far. News of the meeting between DeSantis and Trump was first reported by the Washington Post, which said that the get-together between the two was orchestrated by Steve Witkoff. Witkoff is a Florida real estate broker known to both Trump and the DeSantis camps. Sources familiar confirmed that the meeting was set up nearly 10 days ago after DeSantis had met with Witkoff. The meeting appears to be the first time that DeSantis and Trump have spoken, let alone met in person, since the governor ended his White House bid back in January after a very disappointing second place finish in the Iowa caucuses. The former president and his allies spent nearly a year attacking DeSantis as the two faced off for the GOP nomination. DeSantis suspended his presidential campaign just 2 days ahead of the New Hampshire primary when he saw the writing on the wall. To date, DeSantis hasn't campaigned on Trump's behalf, though. During a February call with supporters, Governor DeSantis took aim at Trump and his political advisors. He said at the time, "I think he's got people in his inner circle who were part of our orbit years ago that we fired. And I think some of that is that they just have an axe to grind." In response, top Trump campaign aide Chris LaCivita called DeSantis a sad little man. Political insiders say that while many on Trump's team and his wider political orbit detest DeSantis, the former president may be more than forgiving if he believes that DeSantis can help him. Trump said in January that DeSantis endorsed him, or after DeSantis endorsed him, that he would officially retire the derogatory Ron DeSanctimonious nickname he had used repeatedly to attack the Florida governor for nearly a year during the campaign. Speaking of the campaign, did South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem take herself out of contention for being Donald Trump's potential vice presidential running mate? Have you heard about this story over the weekend? I'll clue you in here in just a moment. First, let me talk with you about PhD weight loss and nutrition. Do you need to lose some extra weight? Do you want to get healthy? Do you want to be able to do some things this summer that maybe you haven't been able to do in quite some time because of that excess weight? Well, let me talk with you about Dr. Ashley Lucas and her wonderful team at PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition, particularly the Greenville office, which is where I did the program almost 4 years ago now. I was able to lose 30 pounds very quickly, and 4 years later, I've been able to maintain that, and that's what I love about PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition. Dr. Ashley Lucas invented this program. It's based on the science of nutrition, what to eat, when to eat, and how to eat. It's real simple. And once you take part of in the program, it all kind of comes together, and your relationship with food will change, I promise you. It did for me. Let me encourage you to set up your first consultation. Sit down and talk with someone. You can go to the Greenville office, the Asheville office, the Charlotte office, Lake Norman office, or if you're not in the area or you don't want to even go to the office, you can do the program virtually as well. Just call 864-252-4925. Doesn't matter how you do it, just do it. If you've been on the fence about, maybe you've heard me talking about PhD weight loss and nutrition for some time now, and you haven't been able to quite make up your mind if this is right for you, make the call right now. Pause this podcast, grab a pencil and piece of paper, write this number down, 864-252-4925. Find them online at myphdweightloss.com. PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition, the official partner of the Clemson Tigers. A very defiant South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem hit back at some of her detractors following outrage over her upcoming memoir that says that she killed a dog. Have you heard the story? Writing on X yesterday, the governor said, "I can understand why some people are upset about a 20-year-old story of Cricket, one of the working dogs at our ranch, in my upcoming book, No Going Back. The book is filled with many honest stories of my life, good and bad days, challenges, painful decisions, and lessons learned," she wrote. "The fact is, South Dakota law states that dogs who attack and kill livestock can be put down. Given that Cricket had shown aggressive behavior toward people by biting them, I decided what I did." Now, here's the story. Outrage spread across social media over the weekend after The Guardian reported on an excerpt from Ms. Noem's upcoming memoir. Again, it's titled No Going Back. It's set to be released May the 7th. In the excerpt, Governor Noem described taking her 14-month-old female dog, Cricket, to a gravel pit near her farm and shooting her because it was less than worthless, according to her, untrainable, and had killed and eaten several chickens. She said Cricket had ruined a pheasant hunt when she went out of her mind with excitement, chasing all those birds and having the time of her life. The governor went on to say, "It was not a pleasant job, but it had to be done. And after it was over, I realized another unpleasant job needed to be done," she continued. In the book, Noem described killing a nasty and mean goat at the same gravel pit, according to the report. Evidently, you think the gravel pit is kind of like the train station in Yellowstone? You don't want to be taken to the train station? This report, of course, led to pushback online from Democrats and conservatives who appeared shocked and outraged over the killing of a dog. Popular conservative X account Cat Turd tweeted, Oh my gosh, now my blood is boiling. Remember, I'm a country boy who lives on a ranch. There's a huge difference between putting an old horse down who is suffering than shooting an 18-month-old dog for being untrainable. But then to plug your book at the end? Seriously, is it just me? I have no words, he added. New York Post columnist Miranda Devine commented, no, not normal, shameful. Democrat Montana gubernatorial candidate Ryan Buss posted, anyone who has ever owned a bird dog knows how disgusting, lazy, and evil this is. Damn, he wrote. Noam has been floated as a potential running mate of former President Trump's in his effort to regain the Oval Office. Critics, however, speculated the controversy over killing her dog may have ended her career in politics. The Guardian wrote, amid widespread disbelief that a contender to be selected as Donald Trump's running mate would commit such a tale to paper, many observers deem Noam's hopes of national office as dead as cricket and the unnamed goat. Also, animal rights groups condemned Noam, writing, this is from Wayne Pussell, president of Animal Wellness Action and the Center for a Humane Economy, there's no rational and plausible excuse for Noam shooting a juvenile dog for normal puppy-like behavior. If she is unable to handle an animal, ask a family member or a neighbor to help. If training and socializing the dog doesn't work, then give the dog to a more caring family or to a shelter for adoption. He makes good points here, doesn't he? Look, as you know, I'm a dog lover. You know that Jesse and Simon are a big part of Peg and mine's, of our life. I can't imagine, and I understand sometimes on a farm, things have to be done, but kind of like the post on X, I understand it if it's a horse or a cow or an animal who needs to be put down for their own benefit because they're in pain. But to shoot, to kill a dog, because according to her own description, it's puppy-like behavior? I'm not sure about this one, folks. Am I wrong? Love to get your comments on the Furman Ford text line, 864-477-JOEY, 864-477-5639. Am I overreacting, and are all these other people overreacting to Kristi Noem shooting a dog, pretty much a puppy? She initially addressed the controversy on Friday, posting on X that her family loves animals, quote, but tough decisions are often made on farms, she said. We love animals, but tough decisions like this happen all the time on a farm. Sadly, we just had to put down three horses a few weeks ago that had been in our family for 25 years. She posted encouraging people to purchase her memoir for real, honest, and politically incorrect stories that have the media gasping. Well, again, three horses that had been with her family for 25 years, they had reached an age where it was probably to their benefit. But a dog that was just over a year old? I think that's apples and oranges. I don't think that's a fair comparison. Yesterday, Noam said that she does not shy away from difficult decisions and believes people are looking for leaders who are authentic, she said. What I learned from my years of public service, especially leading South Dakota through COVID, is people are looking for leaders who are authentic, willing to learn from the past, and don't shy away from tough challenges. My hope is anyone reading this book will have an understanding that I always work to make the best decisions I can for the people in my life. Whether running the ranch or in politics, I have never passed on my responsibilities to anyone else to handle, even if it's hard and painful. I followed the law and was being a responsible parent, dog owner, and neighbor. As I explained in the book, it wasn't easy, but often the easy way isn't the right way. Again, she's justifying killing this dog. I don't know. I have a whole new attitude, whole new look on Governor Kristi Noem right now. I can't imagine killing a dog, a hunting dog, because it was a bit hyper. Am I all wet on this one? Am I just letting my love and my heart for Jesse and Simon get in the way here? 864-477-JOEY. The anti-Israel protests continued on college campuses around the country over the weekend, including a presidential candidate who was arrested also. Green Party 2024 presidential candidate Jill Stein was among 100 people arrested Saturday at Washington University in St. Louis, according to her campaign manager. Stein's campaign manager, Jason Call, said that he, Stein, and deputy campaign manager Kelly Morrell Kerr were all arrested at the encampment on the campus. So the whole campaign staff was arrested and seemed to be proud of it. In a statement, Call said the demand from the encampment was specifically for the university to divest from Boeing, which manufactures munitions used in the ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza at their nearby St. Charles facility. The Stein campaign supports the demands of the students and their peaceful protests and assembly on campus. Student protest for peace and civil liberties has always represented the best part of our collective moral conscience, solidarity. Again, more than 100 people were arrested at the Washington University anti-Israel protest over the weekend, which is one of the many demonstrations taking place this week at college campuses across the country as these colleges are trying to wrap up their semester and hold graduation ceremonies. California State Polytech University Humboldt issued a statement yesterday condemning the, quote, lawless behavior of anti-Israel protesters who have taken over two academic buildings and rebranded them Infidata Hall. The university said it issues that its issue was not with the protest itself, but with the ongoing unlawful occupation of campus buildings by students and non-students. The protesters' objectionable actions, the university said, include such criminal acts as vandalism, theft, destruction of state property, and intimidation of university employees, actions that have created safety hazards for those who have barricaded themselves inside, blocking exits to the building. They basically have taken over two buildings on campus. They go on to say this has nothing to do with free speech or freedom of inquiry. It is lawless behavior that has harmed the vast majority of our students whose education has been interrupted, damaged the reputation of our school, and drained resources from the accomplishment of our core educational purpose. University said protesters inside Siemens Hall, one of the two that have been taken over, were asked to move their demonstration outside but refused. Then police tried to enforce the order to disperse, but individuals resisted arrest, ending in a confrontation that escalated and led to police withdrawing. Now imagine if police had hurt one of those students, or God forbid, a student or police officer had been killed trying to disperse this protest. The university said that its goal has always been to bring a peaceful end to the occupation, and we continue to talk to anyone willing to have productive and respectful dialogue. They estimated the cost of illegal activities will be in the millions of dollars. Think about that for a minute. This school is going to end up, and a lot of other schools around the country too, are going to end up spending millions of dollars because of the damage these bunch of thugs have caused on these campuses. And they're still negotiating with them. The college said that includes damage done by theft, vandalism, and graffiti, and the supplies and personnel needed to repair that, in addition to the loss of revenue from disruption of university operations. The university said, but the true cost has been the disruption of the education of our students who came here to learn and get a college degree. Now get this, as these anti-Israel protesters continue around the campuses nationwide, many of the students who have been part of this, who've been part of the demonstrations, the damage of property, are awaiting, of course, the consequences of taking part in these demonstrations, if there will be consequences. For many, final exams, financial aid, and even graduation are on the line, and their plight has become a central part of the protest. Get this, students and professors alike in some areas are demanding amnesty. What's at issue here is whether the universities and law enforcement will clear the charges and withhold other consequences, or whether the suspensions and legal records will follow students into their adult lives. Well, of course they should. Is there any scenario where these students who have broken the law should not be, should not have these charges remain on their record? So now they're trying to negotiate with the schools and law enforcement to expunge their records of what they have done these past few weeks in return for stopping? Terms of suspensions vary, of course, from school to school. This all started at Columbia, and it's turned into a nationwide showdown between students and administrators. And of course, the students are crying that they're trying to limit their freedom of speech. In the past 10 days, hundreds of students have been arrested, suspended, put on probation, and in some cases expelled from colleges including Yale University, University of Southern California, Vanderbilt, and University of Minnesota. Look, they haven't expelled enough of them. And I hope that these colleges won't back down and will hold these students responsible. Again, I ask you, and you can send me a quick note on the Furman Ford tax line, 864-477-5639. Is there any scenario that these thugs should be granted amnesty? How does amnesty even come into play here? They must be smoking dope while they're protesting if they believe that they should be given a free pass. These are the same people who are demanding that protesters from January 6th be thrown under the jail. But yet now they feel like that they shouldn't be held accountable, that they should be granted amnesty, that this shouldn't be held against them, that in Columbia University, example, that they took over the campus, caused the cancellation of graduation for some students who wanted no part of this. They had worked hard for 4 years, earned a degree. All they wanted to do was for mama and daddy to come be able to watch them walk across the stage and get their diploma. And because of these thugs, a lot of those activities had to be canceled. This past week's in-classroom teaching was all canceled because of these demonstrations. And they think they should get amnesty? They think that the arrest for ignoring police officers' instructions to break up, to leave the campus, that those should be ignored? Wow. One final thing, and this is a positive. An Israeli student reportedly has been elected president of the Student Government Association at Columbia University against this whole backdrop of anti-Israel protests that's disrupted the campus life over the past 10 days or so. The organization Student Supporting Israel announced that the election of Israeli student Maya Platek was elected student government president on Friday. Good for her. Congratulations, Ms. Platek. Following her election, she said that she was honored to have been elected the student body president for the 2024-2025 school year as Columbia hits a peak of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. More than ever before, it is critical that our voices are heard and our safety is protected, she said. Her election came as student anti-Israel demonstrations again swept across Columbia University particularly, but across the nation in general. 864-477-5639. 864-477-JOEY. Your comments are welcome on the Furman Ford text line. The Post and Courier, in a column this past week, asked a good question. Can South Carolina legislator lawmakers serve a boss and the public at the same time? According to the Post and Courier, it happens a lot, they claim. Before I get into that, let me talk with you about your new vehicle that you're looking for. Do you need a new vehicle to transport the family to and from school, you back and forth to your job? Maybe you need a good pre-owned vehicle that you can trust, that you know has been checked out and is reliable. Maybe you want to buy a brand new one, or you have specific features that you'd like, you want to order one. Furman Ford and Lawrence can help you with all these things. And the best part of doing business with Furman Ford is that you're doing business with a locally owned, family operated business right here in the upstate. This is not some big corporate owned dealership where the owners are in some other state far away. Furman Ford. Their name is on the sign because their name is on the line. Jim Furman, Matthew Furman, father and son, operate Furman Ford in Lawrence, and they do business the right way. When you stop by Furman Ford, or when you give them a call, or when you send them an email, you're always going to have access to a member of the Furman family. They'll help you navigate the great deals they have on their inventory, pre-owned and new vehicles. And better yet, if you need service on your existing vehicle, whether it's a Ford or any other make or model, they service all makes and models, and you do not have had to purchase the vehicle at Furman Ford. They'll help you with the service as well. And you're not going to have to wait weeks to get that done. Furman Ford. The best part about doing business with them, when you purchase a car or you have them service your vehicle, you know that your money is staying right here in the upstate of South Carolina. You're going to love doing business with them as well. Find them online at FurmanFord.com, FurmanFord.com. The Post and Courier, in a column, says, here's a hypothetical. An official with a South Carolina advocacy organization decides to run for the state legislature. He gets elected to the House of Representatives, but as a part-time legislator, cannot afford to quit his full-time job. So he keeps his job and in his role occasionally votes on bills that benefit members of his advocacy organization. They ask the question, is this unethical? Potentially disqualifying? His political opponent would argue, yes. In a recent political advertising circulating on social media, the Post and Courier writes, Richland County Democrat Senator Dick Harpulian's campaign argues in his June primary opponent, St. Matthews Representative Russell Ott, was bought and paid for continuing to work for as a $75,000 per year consultant for the South Carolina Farm Bureau Federation while occasionally voting on or leading discussions on agricultural-related issues in the State House. Ott never attempted to hide his role with the Bureau. His father, former State Representative Harry Ott, currently leads the organization, according to the Post and Courier, and his salary has been disclosed on every ethics form he submitted since his election in 2013. And under state ethics laws, he has every right to continue advocating for the organization's interest. As long as the legislation he is advocating for helps agriculture as a whole, rather than something that would directly benefit his organization, it's all fair game, they write. Harpulian is going to try to say that I'm doing something wrong by working for farmers and supporting the agricultural industry, which is the number one industry in the entire state of South Carolina. Ott, who owns a farm in addition to his consulting work, said in an interview with the Post and Courier. He said, I've been involved with agriculture my entire life. I started riding tractors when I was 2 years old. They go on to write that Representative Ott's situation is not unique. Here's another hypothetical. The state representative representing a major South Carolina city earns a $100,000 annual salary from the city while advocating for their interests, like current state representative Wendell Gilliard does on the payroll for the city of Charleston. Or when the husband of a board member for a major South Carolina utility company leads major debates on legislation clearing the way for a major gas generated power plant that they plan to build. That's just what Myrtle Beach Senator Luke Rankin was noted to be doing in a recent article by the state newspaper about his role in legislation regarding Dominion and state-owned Santee Cooper, where his wife serves on the board. They put a footnote here that Rankin denied having any financial interest in the company in a statement to the newspaper. One of the more notable hypotheticals this session involves a national lobbyist for major firearms manufacturer Sig Sauer, Greenville Republican Representative Bobby Cox, sponsoring and leading debate on legislation allowing the permitless carry of firearms across South Carolina. Now, the Post and Courier notes Cox said in a text message, he and his company had no direct financial stake in passing permitless carry and that his CEO had no knowledge of his advocacy on the policy. When it comes to evaluating questions of conflict of interest, the threshold is oftentimes a hard one to hit, according to the Post and Courier. Lynn Teague, a lobbyist for the League of Women Voters who often works on ethics issues in the legislature, wrote in an email to the Post and Courier, "There are questions of legitimate interest for the public, such as conflict of interest, like Bobby Cox sponsoring and lobbying for bills to benefit Sig Sawyer." Lynn Teague goes on to write, "That should be illegal, but isn't. If Russell is doing things that directly benefit the Farm Bureau, I haven't heard of any. That would also be something that should be illegal and might be depending on the circumstances." Now, it's not a new issue by any means, the Post and Courier writes. Current debates around the ability of lawyer legislators like Harpulian to pick judges and vote on legal issues go back for decades, but have gone unresolved primarily due to the inherent potential for conflicts in a legislature where nobody can afford to live on their taxpayer salary alone. The South Carolina legislative pay breaks down to $10,400 a year, plus a $185 per day per diem when in session. The State House generally meets 3 days a week, January to May, and $1,000 monthly for in-district expenses. The Post and Courier writes, "But that system, I'd argued, also creates a system where only the independently wealthy can serve. According to a 2021 study by the National Conference of State Legislatures, South Carolina lawmakers work the equivalent of 74% of a full-time job. And at about $10,000 per year, they make well below the average wage of $41,110 for similarly tasked legislatures." He said, "A part-time legislature is served best when we have a broad cross-section of people. Unfortunately, the system that we currently have with the pay that is given to legislators makes it hard for a lot of folks to actually offer themselves for service. I think that's why you see the General Assembly a lot of times being made up of only lawyers or retirees or independently wealthy folks. Some would argue there's utility in bringing their professional expertise to the legislative process." Bobby Cox said, "The beauty of our legislature is that it's part-time. It pays crap, but service is its own reward. Legislators bring their professional experiences to bear in passing effective legislation," he said. "We have realtors shaping affordable housing issues. We have farmers weighing in on impacts on the agricultural community, family court lawyers helping to protect parental rights, parents helping to stop teen suicide, and in my case, you have a combat veteran who works in the firearms industry leading on Second Amendment efforts. It's better to have someone that is intimate with a policy than someone who is not." Representative Cox makes a good argument, doesn't he? "I think I'd probably rather have someone like a Bobby Cox who has the knowledge of firearms, leading the effort, leading the charge for our Second Amendment rights." Post and Courier goes on, "But some potential conflicts stand out more than others," they say. Former State Senator Larry Martin, a Republican from Pickens, faced questions in his role overseeing worker safety issues at an upstate textile plant while simultaneously serving as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. During his time in office, the late Columbia area Senator John Scott was paid by the city as a consultant while simultaneously serving on the Senate Transportation Committee. They say the only way to resolve the issue, some in South Carolina claim, is to end the practice of part-time legislature and remove outside income as a factor. John Krangel, a longtime South Carolina government watchdog who is currently writing a book on ethics issues in the State House, says at the end of the day, you're getting money from a client. This large amount of money is going to influence you, your judgment, and your inclination to be favorable to the person that's paying you all the money. As long as you have part-time officials, you have the opportunity for corruption and conflicts of interest. Prospects for that happening, however, are slim. The Post and Courier gives for an example when Darlington Democrat Representative Robert Williams brought an amendment during a March 12th House budget debate to increase legislators' pay by $1,000 per month. He faced a series of scathing questions, then laughter from colleagues while he attempted to justify the pay increase. The Post and Courier ends their column by saying the amendment was then soundly defeated on a voice vote. What do you think? Can a legislator who works for an employer, who happens to have interest come up in the legislature? Can he or she be effective? Can serve the people while serving, as the Post and Courier calls it, their master at the same time? Should legislators be paid more? Would that eliminate this issue, you think, if they were paid a full-time salary, like some states do? Comments welcome on the Furman Ford text line, 864-477-5639. On the text line, Tony writes, Joey, I have a solution for protesters. Put them in planes and send them to Palestine and give them a one-way ticket. No returning to the USA. Tony, I would not want to be on your bad side. Faye writes, these protesters should have their registration for next year canceled along with their voter registration and them hauled off to jail. Where are their parents? Faye asks. I would be there yanking my kid by the hair of the head. You'd probably be arrested, Faye. Faulty should be fired on the spot. Foreign students should be sent home and never allowed back on our soil. We have too many anyway. And the South has gotten lots of obnoxious Northern who should consider going back to the state they helped ruin. Okay, Faye. Appreciate your comments on the Furman Ford text line. Christy writes, these colleges need to be defunded, fined, and closed if they can't control the activities on their grounds. Higher education, in quotation marks, is at an all-time low, isn't it? Pete says, talking about pot, I was in D.C. the other week to the mall, and it reeked of pot, even in cars passing by. Look, you can go to one of these cities where it's legal, Pete, you smell it on every corner. Pete's responding. I mentioned that the other day on an episode where when Peg and I were in New York recently, you could just smell it out on the street because it's legal. You go into a shop and buy it. Caroline writes on the Furman Ford text line. Good morning, Joey. Regarding residents of blue states moving to red states, I heard on the news this week that Charlotte has an influx of new residents at a rate of 100 people per day. I was astounded to hear that figure, but believe it to be true because the highways throughout North Carolina are so crowded and the landscape of beautiful trees is being clear-cut to make way for the countless apartment complexes. It actually makes me sad and long for the days when people stay where their roots are. I hope all these residents moving into the Carolinas are conservative-minded, but if you're moving to Mecklenburg, Buncombe, or Wake counties, chances are you're not a conservative. Hence, we are a purple state. Scott in Toccoa writes, okay, back before Biden took office, it cost me $20 a week in gas to get back and forth to work. Now it costs me $30 to make the same trip. Also, the person who did the calculations on the cost of groceries was a little light. I used to spend $100 to $150 a week. Now it's $200 to $250 a week. That's Bidenomics for you, Scott, for sure. Jordan writes, speaking on inflation, I want to speak on child care. 4 years ago, under Trump, my children's child care was $100 per child. Now it's $165 per child, and their reason was to pay the care providers a livable wage due to the increase in food and fuel for the teachers. Biden doesn't care about America. Plain and simple, he does not care. Pause. Jordan. Jordan, of course, referring to Joe Biden reading the instruction pause from his teleprompter the other day. That's a good one, Jordan. Jennifer says, hey, Joey, what's costing me more money under Bidenomics besides groceries and everything else? Toiletries, in all caps. Your basic toiletries that you used to go to Walmart and buy because they were cheaper. Toothpaste, mouthwash, body lotion, regular soap, and things like that. Everything's more expensive, Jennifer. Everything is. Our text of encouragement today, Joel writes, the one who falls and gets up is so much stronger than the one who never fell. God bless. Thank you, Joel. 864-477-JOEY, 864-477-5639. Send your comments to the Furman Ford text line. A gold pocket watch that was worn by the richest passenger by the Titanic when the ill-fated ocean liner sank was sold at auction Saturday. Want to guess how much it brought? That in just a moment. First, let me talk with you about your dishwasher that's no longer washing dishes because it's gone out on you and you need a new one, right? Well, it's real simple. I'm going to help you out here. head over to Pickens to Discounted Appliance Warehouse. Jeff, Johnny, Kyle, the entire team at Discounted Appliance Warehouse will be able to help you with that dishwasher. They'll be able to find you the right replacement, and Johnny and his team will have it out there expertly installed in no time. That's why I shop with Discounted Appliance Warehouse. They make it so easy. Plus, they have a huge warehouse full of, at any given time, 1,500 appliances, which means you can buy today and use today quite often. And you're more than just a credit card swipe at Discounted Appliance Warehouse. They make you part of the family. They take care of you well after the sale. Again, I know firsthand because I've been buying appliances from Discounted Appliance Warehouse for many, many years now. They're very proud to offer the Speed Queen the only washer and dryers with manufacturer's warranties that cover parts and labor for up to 7 years. Check out their many great deals at Discounted Appliance Warehouse. I promise you, you will not regret taking that short drive over to Pickens. Find them online as well at dawpickens.com, dawpickens.com. A gold pocket watch, which was worn by the richest passenger aboard the Titanic when that unsinkable ocean liner actually sank, was sold at auction on Saturday for a record-breaking $1.5 million. The watch belonged to John Jacob Astor IV, a New York business magnate and real estate developer at the time, and was expected to sell for about $189,000 at auction, according to auction house Henry Aldridge, son in Wiltshire, England. The watch's case is engraved with Astor's initials, JJA. It's 14-carat gold. Ended up selling for a total of $1.485 million, Henry Aldridge and son told Fox Digital on Sunday. The watch was one of several items recovered from Astor's body after the ship struck an iceberg, sank on April 15, 1912, during its maiden voyage. As all of you probably have seen the movie, it left from Southampton to New York City. Astor was 47 years old at the time, went down with the ship after helping his wife, Madeline, who was pregnant, onto a lifeboat. When Astor was told he could not join his wife until all women and children had boarded lifeboats, Titanic folklore says the businessman stepped back, lit a final cigarette, and tossed his gloves to Madeline. It said that Astor then went to smoke a cigarette with author Jacques Futuel, who also died. After the watch was recovered from Astor's body, the auction house said Astor's son, Vincent, gave it to the son of William Dobbin, Astor's executive secretary, as a christening gift. The watch was eventually returned to the Astor family and underwent restoration. In addition to Astor's gold watch, the auction also sold Wallace Hartley's bag, which held the famous Titanic violin that the bandmaster played as the ship was sinking. The bag was initially estimated to sell for around $150,000. The auction house confirmed that it brought $454,949 at auction on Saturday. The leather case was found strapped to Hartley's body when it was recovered. The violin, the most valuable Titanic-related item in existence, is on display at the Titanic Belfast Museum. Astor's Titanic plan, showing the layout of the ocean liner, was also sold for $37,912. Have you ever wondered what people do with these type things? And how much money do you have to buy a watch for $1.5 million, one that you just will put in a case somewhere to look at? I guess I'll never fully understand collecting items like that. 864-477-JOEY. Love to get your comments on the Furman Ford text line. That's it for today's Just the Truth. Thanks for joining me in the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Studio. To lose weight for the last time, visit myphdweightloss.com. Please join our mailing list if you haven't done so already. Visit my website, joeyhudson.com. Click on the Connect with Joey button so that you can receive our emails with the most up-to-date news. Also, find me on YouTube. Just search for Joey Hudson. Send me a quick text if you have any trouble with that, and I'll send you a link. Find me on Facebook and Instagram as well. Thanks for spending a few minutes of your day with me. Hey, and be sure and forward Just the Truth to friends and family. We need to build our community as we head into the June primaries and especially the November general elections. The way we beat Joe Biden and the Democrats is through educating people, and no better way than encouraging them to listen to Just the Truth. So take just a few minutes right now. Click on the share button and send it to some people in your contact list. Keep those comments coming as well on the Furman Ford text line, 864-477-5639. Emails, welcome as well, joey@joeyhudson.com. We're back again tomorrow. Until then, remember, God's got this. He's still in control.